Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Suzanne Hogan. Steve Kraske is away. Popping out of a black background, they dance with vibrant energy, two Samoan dancers, faces painted in white, draped in traditional clothing, headdresses and all. They flail their arms and move to create a whimsical feather-like stream, like soft brush strokes in a painting. But this is no painting. It's a photograph taken by photographer Catherine Carnot. Catherine Carnot is a travel photographer, photojournalist, whose images have appeared in National Geographic, among other publications. Catherine, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
You can see that image and a lot more on our website at kcur.org. Catherine Carnot will be speaking tonight as part of the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts National Geographic Live Series. Let's start first by diving deeper into the construction of that really beautiful image that I just described. I'm wondering, how much do you think about constructing an image before you take it? Thinking about light and creative ways of addressing light, especially in that particular image.
I don't think too much about a photograph beforehand. I usually react to what I see. I do, of course, do a lot of research on an assignment, thinking about where I'm going, where the best places will offer me photogenic photographs, what looks good. We're always researching to find what's visual. But in the moment, I just react with my eyes.
In that particular image, there's really a sense of a lot of movement, and you seem to think about that a lot when constructing your photographs. Can you talk about how you capture movement?
What's important in photographs is energy and emotion, which you can capture quite simply with the emotion on somebody's face or by actually bringing motion into the image, simply slowing down the shutter. Can give you that sense of motion.
You think about light, obviously, every time you're in a position where you're looking to photograph something. And sometimes that can mean waiting for hours and hours on location until just the right moment happens. I'm wondering, how much time do you spend kind of just waiting for the image to come to you before you take it?
Light is absolutely essential. I mean, beautiful light, good light is what helps to create mood, which is what's so important in a photograph. And yes, sometimes we can stand for 2 hours, 3 hours in a certain spot for perhaps the sun to emerge from the clouds or for the patterns of light to be just so or the fog to come in. There's a lot of waiting in photography.
And while you're waiting, what kind of things do you think about? Are you always on waiting for that moment to just click the button, or do you kind of let yourself be more present in the moment?
I'm always on. I'm always in the zone. I'm always focused.
So photographers tend to bring their cameras everywhere. I see that you brought yours today. Are there ever times where you just leave the camera at home and go out and experience the day without the impulse of wanting to take a picture?
Well, in my daily life, I don't carry my camera around. I usually just, leave it in the cupboard. But when I'm on assignment, or even if I'm just on holiday in a different place, either in the U.S. or certainly abroad, I have my camera with me all the time. And I find that, for example, I was on holiday in Rome. And I thought, well, I'll just leave the camera back in the hotel room this afternoon and enjoy walking around and tasting foods. And instead, the whole time I was shooting with my iPhone.
Oh, really? So you, even when you leave your nice camera at home, you're still capturing these images.
Yeah, especially when... These are moments that may not repeat themselves. I mean, like everybody, like even amateur photographers, I want to capture those memories and remember that moment.
When you're on assignment, especially in the digital age, there's a tendency to just shoot and take as much as you can. And I'm wondering what's the average for how many shots you gather versus finding the one that gets published, the one that National Geographic says, yes, that's it. How many other photographs are kind of in the pot there?
Well, let's say for a 2-week assignment, I might shoot 12,000 images. I'll come away with about perhaps 12 good pictures.
Wow. 12,000 to 12?
That's about right. Yeah.
So do you keep the ones that didn't make it?
Well, different people have different methods, different photographers. I usually delete perhaps 20% right off the bat. I mean, not in the camera, but later after the end of the shoot, because they take up a lot of space on hard drives. So I'll maybe delete about 20%, and I'll keep the rest, but I'll indicate which ones are the bests and then the seconds and thirds.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Suzanne Hogan. We're talking with National Geographic photojournalist Catherine Carno. If you have questions for Catherine about photography, she teaches a lot of workshops and can offer a lot of advice on how you can make the best image come to be, give us a call. Our number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. I want to talk a little bit about some of your personal life and some of the things you've covered. Your father was a journalist, and I'm wondering how much of that influenced your desire to become a photojournalist.
Well, my father was a journalist and my mother was an artist. So I feel that what I do as a photographer and a photojournalist is really pretty much a combination of what I learned from them. Also, having grown up in Hong Kong, I've been traveling since I was born, and traveling, seeing the world, immersing myself in different cultures is very natural for me. So, you know, I got that from my mother's line of the family. My father was my grandfather on my mother's side was a great adventurer. So it all comes quite naturally. And of course, I think that I got the artistic side from my mother and the journalistic side from my father.
You've studied semiotics, the observance of interpretation of signs. And I'm just wondering how you use semiotics to apply this idea when you create an image.
I wouldn't say that I apply it, but I would say that it's somewhere within my brain, having studied, you know, being able to see things critically, how various signs and not literally signs and symbols, but elements within a photograph can be significant, can convey underlying meanings.
Let's talk about your coverage of Vietnam, a place that you've been covering for 23 years. Your first images from when you were there in 1990 portray a completely different landscape from the place that is what it is now, 23 years later. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how you've approached this country and its change and how you've gone about documenting this process.
Well, I find myself going back to Vietnam perhaps more and more often. It's an absolutely fascinating, intoxicating country that somehow just gets under your skin. The more I seek to understand the politics, the economy, the culture, the changes, the more fascinating it becomes. It's like peeling back that onion. You think you've gotten to something, and then it's once again, more questions arise. And there's something compelling about the way that it changes. It changes so quickly, not so much in the countryside, but in the cities. And to witness the changes, I mean, you can return simply a year later, and it's changed a lot. So I think that Vietnam resonates for so many of us because it was such an important part of our history. And there's still so many legacies of what they call the American War. So many legacies still exist.
Can you think of some specific images that you've taken that really exemplify this change to give our listeners a sense?
Well, now, of course, you have a growing disparity between rich and poor. So what you see now that you certainly did not see in the mid-90s and previous is a whole sort of new crop of millionaires and suburban developments that look like Orange County, California, where Vietnamese kids who have never left Vietnam are going to international and American schools and taking American names.
I'm thinking about an image that you captured of a woman on a motorcycle and she's holding this chicken. And can you talk about when you captured that moment, what was going on and how did you just take that away from it to kind of set a scene for what a bustling Vietnamese street looks like today.
Well, that's a photograph with a lot to say and a long history, which I don't think we probably have time to go into now. But it's a photograph of somebody who's become a good friend of mine, actually, Phuong An Nguyen. And it was taken in 1994. Phuong An, like many people, like most people who left Vietnam by the hundreds of thousands, escaped Vietnam by boat, hence the term boat people. And after many attempts at escaping, she finally got away, grew up in Pasadena, California, and then returned back to Vietnam in 1992. And then in about 94, she opened the hottest bar in Saigon called the Q Bar. And so I had met her on assignment in 94, and she was so beautiful and chic and stunning and just sort of stood out that we spent the day riding around on motorcycles. I was actually riding on the back of a motorcycle facing backwards as we rode around the streets of Saigon together. And just whatever happened, I just captured it. And we happened to go through this market. I don't remember exactly the moment, but we just pulled to a stop and she grabbed this chicken and I shot it. And when I show that photograph to a Vietnamese person, they know that she's not a quote-unquote real Vietnamese, that she's a returning Vietnamese, because a real Vietnamese would grab the chicken by its feet, not by its neck.
Are there some other examples of photographs that you took on that trip that were published that, you know, stick out in your mind right now?
Well, a well-known photograph of mine is the photograph of the woman on the train, which has been published many times. And that was actually taken in 1990, just a couple of years earlier. I was traveling on the Saigon-Hanoi train, which was going very, very slowly in the July heat. And I thought that it might make a good photograph as we started to climb the Hai Van Pass, or the Pass of the Clouds in central Vietnam, that as we came down the mountain, I thought it would make a good photograph because you would be able to see the train curving around if I shot outside the window of the first compartment. So I scurried up to the front, and sure enough, as we started to come down the mountain, for the first time in days, you know, we felt a breeze. We could actually breathe for the first time in days. And there was an easy sense of joy. And I was with this woman and her children. And, you know, the photograph came easily because we were so happy. And since then, I've actually been in touch with her and reconnected with her 21 years later.
Wow.
Because the photograph was published in an article in Saigon's leading newspaper. Her daughter saw the photograph, contacted me via Facebook, and said, "The woman on the train is my mother." And we reconnected about a year and a half ago, and now we're good friends.
You can see that photograph and a lot more on our website at kcur.org. Questions for Catherine Carnot about photography? Give us a call at 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. Kind of building off of these relationships that you create with people when you're spending time with them and photographing them, I want to talk about some of the coverage that you've done on the devastating effects of Agent Orange to people in Vietnam and some of the portraits you take. There's really a strong emotional sense to them, and you can tell that you have a relationship with these people, and I wonder if you can talk about that.
It's a very, very important subject, and I think it's an important subject to me personally, and I also feel that as an American, I personally feel a kind of a sense of responsibility. Agent Orange was the toxic defoliant that the U.S. sprayed over parts of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. About 12 million gallons were sprayed at the time. The military thought that the herbicide was only toxic to plants and not to humans. But now we realize that these diseases actually are passed down genetically. And currently there are about 150,000 children and babies who have diseases affected with Agent Orange in Vietnam. not to mention many, many people in the U.S. as well from soldiers who were there. But I spent some time in Da Nang a couple years ago, which is considered a hot spot because that's where we had one of our bases during the war. And there are a lot of victims of Agent Orange living there. And I chose to spend time with two families rather than going to orphanages and various sort of places in Saigon where there are hospitals and orphanages. I prefer to spend many days with two different families so that I could document what it was like for not just the children who are affected, but the parents who have to live with and handle these children who are disabled, you know, in ways that, you know, many children are disabled, that problems are not any different. But my intention was not so much to show how sort of grotesque these diseases can look and to make photographs that look sensational, but my intention was rather to show what it's like for the families day by day to live with this.
In what ways do you think these images that you captured in the coverage helped create awareness and led to the U.S. recognizing this issue and starting to address it?
These photographs have been published a lot. Not only have they won many awards, but they've been used to, for example, rally Congress to initiate a very large cleanup that started, I believe, last August in Da Nang. So they've actually made a very big difference. They're used all the time to bring awareness to this issue.
Your portraits really do tell a lot about your subject. How do you think about taking the frame and really bringing in other elements that can tell more about a person? I'm thinking about a portrait that you do of Ho Chi Minh's personal sculptor, but then also some of the other children that you documented with that were affected by Agent Orange. You really put a lot of thought into them. Can you talk about your process a little bit?
Well, there's a sort of interesting place in the brain where intuition, creativity, and intellectual thought all merge, so that you're not working on a level that's isolates one of them. It's important not to be too cerebral, because you don't want to make photographs that are just informational or literal. A good journalistic shot should have information and emotion. And so the trick is, the key, I believe, is to do a lot of research so that intellectually you understand your subject, but then to get into a sort of creative, intuitive zone so that you're capturing that information without thinking about it too much.
You can see that portrait of Ho Chi Minh's personal sculptor on our website at kcur.org, in addition to a lot of the other photographs that we talked about today. Catherine Carnot, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Catherine Carnot speaks this evening at 7 o'clock at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. You can find out more information about that event and all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date.